Chapter 6 The Yeoman of Sevendore. I had almost forgotten about our run-in with Sir Ganyalan by the next day. I was a little distracted. Alia wasn't feeling well, and I spent most of the morning wrapped up in mage sight, ensuring there was nothing wrong with the baby. It turns out she was just constipated and cranky. In truth, her sweet disposition was beginning to slip, as her girth made her more and more uncomfortable. She was also eating hardily, past hardily. She put Gorka to shame at board the night before, devouring everything in sight. My son was healthy enough, it seemed, although I knew little enough about the intricacies of magical medicine. Luckily, Nanali, the new kitchen mistress of the castle, knew what herbs would ease her frustrations. She had raised a brood of her own children, and if not a midwife or birth sister, she was filled with the rustic lore that old wives seemed to collect, a magic of their own. She did warn me that the crankiness was more likely to worsen before it got better. That seemed like an opportune time to be elsewhere, visiting my yeomen across the vale, for instance. I stopped by the village and watched Sir Kay overseeing the construction efforts while I got Sagal and a few other armed Bovali lads together. I wanted to take advantage of the clear, mild weather and ride out to visit my yeomen. Two yeomanries in particular, the holdings of Gerlor and Ferrant. Both were farming households, and both had left an impression on Sir Kay, one positive, one not. But since I wanted all of my yeomen present at my hall at Yule, I thought it might be a politically wise thing to extend the invitations myself, and introduce myself in the process. Sagal and the Bovali were along to make me look important. Besides, his wife Ella was only a few months behind Alia with her pregnancy, and he needed to escape the modest hut he lived in at the moment as much as I needed to get out of the castle. He put the call out for volunteers, and the men who had horses began to get ready to accompany their lord. It was gratifying to see how quickly the new houses were going up, now that more nails had been procured, and I was pleased to see another would likely have enough of a roof to dwell in before nightfall. One more Bovali family sleeping indoors was a victory. When Sagal and a half-dozen other fellows I knew had mounted, we crossed the commons, kept north of Ketta's stream, and left the road to follow an even less road-like track that led down the geographic centre of my domain. Our first stop was Gerler's Hold. It was nestled on the southern slope of the broad hill that led up to the central peak, Matten's Helm, the locals called it. Most of the northern part of the hold was pastureland, although we saw few beasts. To the south were grain fields, the brown stumps of maize stalks still visible through the light snow. There was also a healthy grove of pecans and apple trees behind protective fencing. As we came to the rough, homemade gate, tied open for the day's business, the courtyard within stirred with activity, mostly chickens and dogs, but a few people came out to greet us. The manor itself was a large, simply built, one-story stone hall, boasting at least two wattle-and-daub bays that I could see, with a stout wooden palisade and thorny hedgework around it. To one side the building extended to a second story, likely where the yeoman lived. A single, modest grain silo, three quarters full, was all the harvest had brought the hold this year. There were seven or eight other outbuildings, shabby but in decent repair, and a cluster of six frame-timbered homes just inside the wall, not the regular round peasant huts. Everything was neat and orderly, and the folk of Gerlo's hold barely looked up from their labours when we rode in. This was the home of a man who worked. They looked more or less like the peasants of Sevendore Village or Gurisham, but they each had undyed woolen cloaks around them, something the villagers lacked. A lad took my horse's bridle while I dismounted, and it didn't take long for someone in authority to approach. The yeoman, Gerlor himself. Gerlor was in his late 30s, a mature man with a dark beard and bushy black hair. His left eye was significantly lower than his right, which made him look surprised most of the time. He was fit and well-muscled, though as lean as all the seven Dori were. And instead of a woolen cloak, he wore a great ox-hide cloak with a crude rendition of some sort of flower on the back. "You must be the new lord," he said without preamble. "Minelan, the wizard. spellmonger. You must be Yeoman Gerlor, I said with a nod.
Ah, you'll be wanting to talk then, eh?
He grunted reluctantly. If you have time, I chuckled. I held up one of the skins I'd filled before I'd left. I brought wine. That improved his disposition immensely. We ended up at his board in front of the fire in his hall. It was a rough table of indeterminate age, worn smooth with endless cleanings. The interior of the hall was neatly arrayed, and proved well-heated and cosy. Gerlor ordered the ember stoked to life at once, and graciously offered the largest chair. There were three to me. I tried to accept the honour just as graciously. A hard-looking woman brought a wooden tray with mismatched leather mugs, as well as a loaf of bread and a pot of cheese.
"Enough, woman!" Gerlor bellowed unnecessarily. "Leave the fussing. We're going to drink by Fricka's nips."
Fricka was a local goddess, apparently. The woman gave him a sour look, smiled at me, which did little to improve her looks, and slunk away.
"My wife," he muttered after she left, "Dirtha. Face like an anvil, but she's got a heart of pure gold. Now, Lord Menelan, you're who my lads have been all talking about. Saw your man, Sir Kay, a few days back. He said you were the type of man to drop by for a surprise inspection."
"I am," I nodded, opening the skin of rough red. There were four more on the horses outside. I like to be prepared. "No doubt you've heard all sorts of things about me by now. That you're generous, virtuous, and handsome," he grunted. "My eldest daughter is smitten with you." That was unexpected. "I'm sure she's a comely lass," I lied, thinking about her mother's face. "I've been here more than a moon, and yet you've paid no visit to me."
"I figured you'd come see me when you had a mind," he shrugged, watching the wine pour into his mug with undisguised enthusiasm. "Figured you had your hands full with the mess that idiot Erenthal left you. Good thing you're a bloody wizard," he said, taking a drink of the wine like it was beer. "You're gonna need a magic wand."
"I have some, and we'll get to that. I hear you're not well disposed to Sir Erenthal."
"I hated the man," he admitted. "Sorry, waste of skin. Give half of the bloody fief away to that pimple, Gimbal. Peasants was getting rowdy, but he didn't have the men to quell it. So he gets Gimbal to raid us into submission, and then hands over Brestall to him, like a name-day gift. Disgraceful. If you do nothing but tax us to death and rape our daughters, you're still a hero to me for sending that sotted goat packing," he said, roaring with laughter.
My Bovali escort laughed, if a little uncomfortably. They weren't used to such harsh language about the nobility, but they had lived under a fairly kind and indulgent lord in a prosperous domain. I could understand Gerlor's perspective. "I'll try to keep the raping to a minimum and the taxation gentle. For now," I added. I was warming up to Gerlor, in spite of the man's coarseness. But getting rid of Erenthal was just the first of many changes I intend to make to Sevendor.
"Ah, that's the truth," he said, almost exasperated.
"Every day my lads come back from the village with more brass in their pockets than I've seen in a year from putting up houses. Sold every damn goat I had to Sir Kay to feed you lot, so I got plenty now myself," he added proudly. "If that's the kind of change coming, bring me a double portion." That was encouraging to hear. From the baleful stares I'd been getting from Raylan the Steady every time I saw him at a distance, I was beginning to wonder if any of the native Sevendori would appreciate the improvements I was making. Gerlor certainly did. I decided to give him a taste of what was to come. "Oh, it is," I assured him, "but the new houses and the new people, and the money, are just the beginning. As the first mage lord in 4 centuries, I plan on using magic to better the lives of everyone in the Vale. But I may ask for you to do some things, even give up some things that you're used to, in exchange. Now, Raylan the Steady has cooperated thus far, though reluctant, and has continued to profit despite the anguish he feels over the changes to the village. And just yesterday I was considering what to do with that peak in the centre of the valley."
"Matten's Helm?" he asked in surprise.
"That's what it's called?" I asked, curious. "I'd heard that. That's a strange name for it."
"Oh, it's been called other things. Brigger's Teat, the Highland, Bald Rock, Seven's Peak, but it's properly known as Matten's Helm. Legend has it that when Lensley's men first came to Sevendor, besides the West Woodmen, there was only a stone folk hermit living in the vale, up there on the peak. Real feisty fellow, named Matten, or at least that's what the human folk called him. Matten kept to himself, mostly, but would come down from the peak and trade trinkets with the peasants for ale and mead. Crazy old creature, legend says. Giallo took another ale-sized swallow of wine, unaware of its potency, and continued, clearly enamoured of the sound of his own story. I didn't mind. This was just the sort of local folklore I was seeking, in order to understand my new domain and my new subjects. Well, from the top of that peak you can see most of the vale, both Sevendor and Brestall. In particular, you can see into Mishi's Spring. Mishi's Spring? I asked, intrigued. I knew the stone folk had settlements in the Yuwaris. That was one of the main reasons I chose Sevendor as my domain. But this was the first sign I'd seen that they'd actually been here. There was a lot about this little land I still didn't know. Oh, that's right. You wouldn't know. Giallo realized. There's a spring away over in Brestall Vale, behind the ridge, between two woods. Secluded-like. Legends say the goddess Mishi, one of Ishi's daughters, bathed there once. Some say it has magical properties, or is blessed by the goddess, or something. But the local maidens like to bathe there, thinking it will make them more comely. He guffawed. My dearth had done been in it 9 times. It hasn't worked yet. Enough wine had been consumed by then to earn a peal of laughter from my Bavali, and it seemed as if Dertha didn't mind the dig. Somehow I suspected it was delivered with great fondness, not out of meanness. A sign of a good marriage, not a troubled one. Anyhow, he continued when he'd collected his wits, this Matten used to sit up there and watch them sport naked in the spring. Now, never heard of one of the stone folk going for a human woman before, but legend says that one lass was so beautiful to him that he began pining for her. She weren't much to look at, in human terms, but I guess them stone folk got other ideas of beauty. So he starts courting her, bringing her father all the treasures them folk are supposed to have. Rubies, diamonds, jewels, that sort of thing. But her da wasn't having it. Threw them jewels back in the poor creature's face. So Matten conspired to kidnap his lighter love one night, and took her with him up to the helm. It's powerful treacherous to get there, if you don't know the way. Hadar sent her brothers up, but Matten stood in the way with a cudgel and a great iron helm. Said that he'd let them take her back if they could knock him out of the way. Well, they tried. They were all stout lads, but every one of them couldn't match Matten's skill. They tried staves, they tried throwing rocks, they tried spears, but they couldn't move Matten. That great bloody helmet kept his head safe, and no blow got past his staff. So they go find a knight up at the castle, and he tries with a sword, and he fails. Then they tried arrows, but the path is so twisty that they couldn't get no range. Finally, Hadar has had enough, and comes up to parley. He meets Matten, and says if he hears from his daughter that she's happy, he'll leave. Then he hears this voice calling, "Da, I love him," from the heights. And the stone folk makes him keep his word. From that day forth, they live there as husband and wife, looking out over the vale and keeping it safe. I looked at Giallo for a moment, and then blinked. They don't seem to have been doing a very good job. That were hundreds of years ago, Giallo laughed, and it were a legend is all. But that's how the peak took its name. You can still get up there, if you know the way. Some of the young folk, they repair to there sometimes to court in secret. Might have to try that myself, after my lady delivers in late winter. Oh, you have a young one on the way, Giallo grinned crookedly. That also earned a smile from his ugly wife. Got 9 myself, he said proudly. Gonna marry off the oldest this spring to my man Parmel. He's my reeve. That first one, he said, shaking his shaggy head nostalgically. That first one will drive you to drink and swear against the gods themselves. But there's nothing like it, nothing like it, he repeated fondly. I tried to change the subject. I was quite aware of my impending fatherhood, and right now I was trying to escape the anxiety by plunging into work. So will you bring your folk to the castle for Yule, then? I promise a merry occasion.
It would be my pleasure, Lord Minolan, he said, with exaggerated grace. I favour the change you've brought, and would like to see more.
Would you like to see more Sevendor, too? I asked cautiously. I'll hold you to your vow to keep it a close secret, because come spring, I'll be adding Brestall back to my domains, if not before. That pleased Gerlor more than the prospect of a jolly Yule. He pledged 5 swords and 12 spears to the effort, and promised his house would be the first in support of such a move. I wanted to finish with something magnanimous, so as I made to depart, I asked the yeoman, Gerlor, what would you say your biggest problem holding this land is, besides the taxes? I quickly amended. He chuckled at that and scratched his beard.
Biggest problem? You took care of that when you sent Erenthal away. Now my daughters can go to the village in peace. But next to that, a market day would be welcome. All your entail declared only one market every 5 weeks, in season, and then doubled the fees. Eggs and such won't keep 5 weeks, Lord Minolan.
Then I pledge that we shall have market every 2 weeks, I nodded, and I will waive all fees for 6 months. In less than a moon there will be many more settlers coming, Gerlor. I promise. You'll be taking top coin for your produce.
Then I can't ask for more, he sighed, as he called for his stable boy to bring our mounts. Thank you for this visit, my lord, he said, placing his hand on his breast and bowing. You hear much about a man, but you don't know him until you've passed a few cups with him.
I couldn't disagree with that. We departed Gerla's hold and continued down the path toward the most eastern of Sevendor Vale's current yeomanries, Ferent's hold. Sagal made a point of riding next to me.
So what did you think? I asked my brother-in-law. Crude man, he admitted, but no less so than most Bovali. He kept a well-run farm. Poor, but well-run. And he seems quite genuine.
You?
Best-looking manor I've seen in Sevendor, and it's worse than the worst of Bovol Vale.
This next district may seem a potent contrast. From what Sir Kay has told me, Ferent is more a friend to Flaria than Sevendor, and he had a poor opinion of the man's character. Sagal chuckled.
Sir Kay has a poor opinion of every man's character.
Now be fair, I countered. I remember when he was the administrator over Bovol, and how tough he was with tribute, taxes, and fees. But he was never unfair. He was never generous, but he was never unfair. Which means that now that I'm Lord, he's perfect for the job, including his character assessments.
I guess things look different when you're the Lord, he conceded.
It's not all silver cups and dancing girls, I said, rolling my eyes. It's like running a very large farm, I suppose. A farm where the chickens can stage an uprising and the goats can plot against you with your neighbours. After Gerlor's hold's boundary stick, the path got progressively more overgrown and less distinct. The peak of Matten's helm loomed overhead, and the air seemed to get damp, even in the cold. The stream was nearby, and according to the map, it would continue until it tumbled through a narrow waterfall, before it continued on into northern Brestall, and joined a few smaller streams. There were more trees and tangled underbrush, and toward the end of the path we were riding directly on the stream bank. Huddled on the bank of the stream was an old, ramshackle, wattle and daub structure that made Gerla's hold look like a palace. It was surrounded by a primitive stone fence, unsuitable for defence, but almost adequate for containing chickens. The expanse of ground around the hall was worn smooth of vegetation and had been pounded into hard clay by many feet over many years. The shutters were hanging. Moss and lichens grew on every surface. There was a faint but foul smell, something worse than the usual peasant odours, and the courtyard of the manor had nothing resembling the hustle and bustle around Gerler's hold. 2 wiry-looking boys of 14 or 15 were splitting wood in the poorly defined axe-yard. They stopped the moment they saw us, pulled their threadbare cloaks over their shoulders. The one with the axe didn't put it down. The one without the axe picked up an axe. Both of them started toward us with a mixture of caution and aggression.
"'Who the hell's are you?'
demanded the elder. He had dark hair and a wide face, just a suggestion of beard on his chin. His brother had dark eyes and a narrow jaw, and no chin to speak of. He tried to make up for it, unsuccessfully, by growing a moustache. "'I am Mage Lord Minolin, Lord of Sevendor,' I said, booming my voice as loud as I could without resorting to magic. "'Who the hell's are you?'
"'Sir Aaron Tal rules Sevendor,' the younger one said angrily, his knuckles going white on the axe handle.
"'Sir Aaron Tal has been replaced. I was given this land by the Duke himself. I'll even produce my grant for your inspection, if either of you know more than three letters between the two of you. But I rule here now. Your names.' There was a long pause as they glanced at each other for support or permission. Finally, the elder said grudgingly,
"'I'm Call. This is my brother Tid. We look to Master Ferrant.'
There was a note of fear in their voices when they named him. "'It is Master Ferrant with whom I have business today,' I said, trying to sound lordly. "'Where might I find him? And where is everyone else?'
"'He's gone,' Call said sullenly. "'Been gone 2 days now. Most of the others are cutting trees or hunting, or running errands.'
There was a note of guilt in his voice. I summoned some patience. "'And where has he gone?' Call looked annoyed.
"'Well, to Brestall Tower he has. At least that's where he usually goes. He's friends with one of the guard there. A real warrior he is,' sneered the boy. "'Not some dainty mage.
He was brave, I'll give him that.
"'And what business does your master have with Brestall?'
Sagal asked, dismounting. Sagal is a big man, tall and stocky. Years working a creamery and herding cows had given him huge biceps and massive forearms, which he made even more imposing with a couple of leather braces. The sword at his hip was almost as intimidating.
He's telling, Call said, clearly intimidated by my brother-in-law.
Then he remembered that he had an axe in his hand, and he held it in front of him, like it was a magical talisman.
He's telling his friend about the usurper in the castle that's messing things up.
That would be me, then? I asked, a little amused.
If you're that wizard, then yeah,
Tid sneered.
When Master Ferrant gets his Brestall friends up, he'll set you to rights.
Set me to rights? I asked, surprised. What harm have I done Ferrant or his folk?
You brought all of them dirty foreigners here, for one, Call accused, and you gave away all that beef, and so no one bought at the market this week, and you turned out noble Sir Arental like he was a common thief, and you're going to start raising taxes and keeping folk from making their rightful living.
Just how does Master Ferrant make his living? I asked, looking around. I nodded toward the small patch of field to the south, not more than 40 or 50 acres on a slope. More of a muddy pit than arable land, cut up into the usual patchwork of plots to be farmed by the manor. Most of it had not been planted last season, I could see. It certainly isn't from his skill with agriculture.
I don't have to tell you nothing,
Call yelled defiantly. Actually, you do, I said apologetically, and you'd better do so soon, or there will be consequences. I'll ask you again. But not a third time. How does Master Ferrant make his living?
He makes liquor,
Call admitted, once Sagal provided sufficient menace.
He makes it for the castle, for Arental. He don't have a permit, though, so he makes it secret. Arental took some of every batch and paid a fair price for it.
That made sense. Distilleries are taxed under the ducal code, and are taxed rather heavily in Castile. Most are chartered directly from the Duke, or from a powerful count or baron, and the taxes involved were stiff enough to ensure that only a distillery large enough to produce and sell hogsheads of liquor a year would find any profit in it. That kept distilled liquors a luxury for the wealthy, and theoretically kept them out of the hands of the peasants. Only there's more than one way to distill alcohol, and peasants like to drink spirits as much as nobles. There's almost always some enterprising artisan who finds a way to feed this market. In the village I grew up in, it was my father's woodcutter who provided small bottles of the precious liquid for his private office, without mentioning it to taxing authorities or my mother. In Sevendor, apparently, Ferent was the supplier, and he sold most of his stock to Erenthal at a discount to keep him from intervening in the untaxed enterprise, and without the worry of the authority showing up and hauling him away for tax evasion and distillation without a permit. Ferent was probably supplying the whole valley. Until we showed up, started bringing wine and beer in, getting rid of his biggest customer and imperiling his entire operation. So, Master Ferent is running a clandestine still. I nodded. This puts him in violation of his oath as yeoman.
You can't do nothing, Tid said angrily. You can't do nothing if you can't find the still.
It's over there, I said casually, pointing towards the woodpile, likely in that dead tree, or perhaps in a cache under that largest log. I brought up mage sight, just to confirm. It took a little adjustment, but it didn't take me long to figure it out. Or both. It looks like you have the condenser in the tree and the boiler pot in the hole. The two boys looked at me like I was a demon. I'm a mage, remember? They looked terrified. But one of the dubious advantages of youth is more bravery than sense. They both took defiant stances and raised their axes. I sighed, drew one of the two war wands I'd brought, and pointed it at the old tree that concealed the condenser. This was the hardest part of a still to replace. I spoke the word of command, and the tree exploded in a shower of rotten wood. The terminally battered condenser, a delicate network of brass tubing in the shape of a falcon, flew a dozen feet away. Both boys took to their heels before it landed. I sighed. I hereby revoke Ferent's warrant for this district. Sagal, could you take charge of this place? It's a mess, and somehow I don't think that liquor is the only vice Ferent catered to. Tear the place apart. Put it back together again. As bad shape as it's in, we could quarter 5 or 6 families here, come Yule. More, he admitted, looking around doubtfully. Can I keep the lads here? He asked, gesturing toward our armed escort. I don't want more trouble than I can handle. Take 3 for now, and I'll have one of them ride back to the castle for more men and some supplies, I agreed. And to tell your wife what you're up to, so she won't accuse you of running off. But take charge here. Question everyone. From the pegboard back at the castle, Ferent owes over 5 ounces of silver for his rent, and he's also in arrears on his reeve payments by another 8 silver. If we can recover any of that, I'll be happy. Destroying the still was a pretext for cleaning this place out, but I want you to put enough pressure on everyone who's left to make the guilty flee before they can face the Goddess of Justice. Whoever is left is likely going to be fine, but shake the fleas off of this dog for me. Men, it would be my pleasure, Sagal agreed. He looked around at his new responsibility with disgust. Look at this place. Garbage everywhere. That smell. Discarded mash, I observed. Lots of it. It molds. I should have recognized it when we got here. I wonder how Sir Kay didn't... Sagal chuckled. Oh, that's because Sir Kay never had to deal with illegal stills in Beauval. If a fellow wants to make liquor, he just ferments cider all autumn, and then lets it freeze come winter. Chuck off the ice, you have the spirits underneath. Don't need all the ironmongery, he said, almost proudly. Ice distillation, I nodded. That makes sense. Put this place to order, and if you have any trouble, send word, and I'll bring the whole garrison. This little hold doesn't look like much, but if anyone can set it to rights, it's you. Just let me know what you need. My pleasure, men, he said, his eyes narrowing as he began to plan. My pleasure. I almost called it a day and rode back to the castle. It was already early evening. Then I recalled Alia's mood this morning, and I decided I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't call on the other yeomanry in the eastern end of the vale, Yeoman Ilveen of Southridge Hold. I had left my escort with Sagal back in Ferent's Hold. We'd have to come up with a new name for it now, so I was proceeding by myself, but I figured I could handle it. I really enjoyed the ride across the valley once I left Ferent's land. Even in winter, Sevendor was a pretty vale.
The setting sun made magnificent colours across the face of the exposed rocks of the cliffs to the southeast, and the rolling pitch of the bottomlands made the whole land seem as active as a seashore. I took my time as I crossed the pasturelands that lead to Southridge, and by the time I arrived at the wooden palisade near twilight, I had a warm, homey feeling. That lasted until I spoke to Yeoman Ilveen. He could have been distantly related to Jerlaw, as he had the same shaggy head and beard, and his eyes were similar. But he did not have Jerlaw's broad shoulders, and his lips were thinner, and his nose longer than the other yeoman. When I pounded on the closed gate of the palisade, Ilveen was the second person I met, after the boy who answered the knock ran off to get him at my summons. I hadn't given my name, just that I was from the castle. Ilveen came out, sword at his belt but unarmored, and gave me and Traveller a long look. "You're from the castle?" he asked, surprised. "You're Yeoman Ilveen?" "I asked the questions in my own hall," he barked back. "Which means you are Yeoman Ilveen," I pointed out. "Excellent. I bear a message from the Lord of Sevendor." "The upstart?" he snorted. "This should be good. What does his lordship say?"
"You seem ill-disposed toward your new lord," I observed. "Don't really matter who I pay taxes to, does it? Erend Tall I learned to do business with, the black-hearted bastard. Who is this new lordling? I hear he was a miller's son, and now he wishes to command a man of my station."
Oh, this was amusing. I wondered just how far he'd go. "He was knighted for his valour and granted this estate in gratitude from the Duke himself."
"Well, goody for him," exploded Ilveen. "Some stranger coming in and upsetting the whole vale, bringing those queer folk with him, and a wizard, too. From all the tales I heard, it's never good to serve a mange lord. It's not proper to bend a knee to a man who—"
"You know," I interrupted, before he said something I'd have to take official notice of, "it's a little dark out here." I waved my hand and summoned a mage light into being between us, a little thing not larger than a hen's egg, so that it illuminated both of our faces in the gloom.
"There, that's better. Now, you were saying something about mage lords."
It took a few moments for him to catch up, but he eventually nodded his head.
"You're him, aren't you?"
"I am," I nodded. "Sire Minolin the Spellmonger, Mage Lord of Sevendor, and I'm a baker's son, not a miller's son, and I aim to set this realm to rights after Erendtal's disgraceful neglect. I've just discharged Ferent from his yeomanry."
"You what?"
Ilveen asked, surprised.
"That sorry rat? Good riddance. Maybe you aren't so bad after all."
"You didn't mind Erendtal, but you hated Ferent," I asked in surprise. "Can I ask why?"
"Erendtal just wanted his rightful tribute, and to tap one of the maids every now and then. Like I said, I could do business with him. But Ferent, he's in the purse of Flaria. I might not like bending a knee to a wizard, but I'm a loyal Sevendari. I don't sell my loyalty."
He said it proudly, if reluctantly. "Well, I ask that you and your household come to a special Yule celebration at the castle," I said gently. "I discharged Ferent for cause, but I won't turn a man out for speaking his mind, especially if he's loyal. Of course, if he proves disloyal, then that is another story. But all I ask is that you give me a chance to earn your loyalty. Fulfill your warrant faithfully, and I'll have no cause to interfere, past a certain point. There will be some changes," I warned.
"Well, stands to reason there would be," Ilveen admitted.
"But bringing in all those queer folk—" "Those queer folk are refugees from the Mindens, from the Western Alshari Wilderlands, Bovol Vale, particularly. And yes, their accent sounds strange and their customs are going to be different, but they are a good and sturdy folk, as honest as you could ask for in neighbours. I'm river-born myself. My folks hail from Tauri, but I've lived with them for a while now, and I tell you, they are good folk. I ask that you give them a chance to earn your friendship, and in the long term, I can see you profiting from that." He seemed to consider the matter, but in the end he made a sour face and shook his head.
"I'll swear to you as lord," he conceded. "That's only right. But you don't interfere with me and mine, and I'll do as my warrant bids. That's a pretty brave attitude to take with your new lord, I pointed out.
You can turn me out like Ferrant, or you can kill me, he declared, but I don't kiss no man's ass. Never have. Not Aaron Tull, and not you.
Fair enough, I conceded. So we can count on your household at Yule, where you will re-swear your oath?
We'll be there, he said warily.
Count on 20, and we'll be bearing arms, in honour of our new lord, he added. Apparently Yeoman Ilveen didn't trust me.
Then I'll make arrangements for that many, I replied evenly.
Good evening, Yeoman, I said as I gathered my reins. I was glad I didn't bring wine inside. I didn't want to prolong this engagement.
Lord, was the curt reply I got, the first tangible acknowledgement of my rank from his lips. I got back to the castle long after dinner was over, so I cajoled Nannerly to bring me a plate in my quarters, where Alia was waiting. She was under the thick blankets we had gotten as wedding gifts back in Talry, looking tired and a little miserable. There would have been a lot more blankets had I not placed a warming spell on the room. The enchantment made it as comfortable as a cool autumn evening, not cold enough to freeze water in the wash basin, as it was elsewhere in the castle.
"Were you avoiding me today?"
she accused, her pretty eyes peering out at me tearfully from beneath the blankets.
"I had some business to attend to,"
I said, as I took a seat at the little table in our room. "I visited 3 of the yeomanries today." I filled her in on events as I ate, and that distracted her a little from the fact that, yes, indeed, I had been avoiding her all day. She was particularly interested in the sudden raising of Sagal Station. Her pregnant sister had been giving her grief about living in a mud hut while she got to live in a castle. Now she'd get to live in a manor hall.
"Well, Sagal is the right man to order a place," she agreed, abandoning her ire for the moment in order to promote her brother-in-law.
She and Ella, her sister, were not at all alike, and seemed to work best when there was sufficient distance between them, but she liked Sagal like a brother.
"Marrying him was the smartest thing my sister ever did. But aren't you worried that people are going to start thinking he got the position by nepotism?"
"He did," I agreed.
"If he wasn't my brother-in-law, he might not have gotten the opportunity. But this isn't a village festival we're organizing here. This is our domain. I need people I can trust in places where they can do the most good. Ferrant's Hold is just this side of the ridge from Brestall, and I didn't want to leave a rotten spot on my frontier.
When your sister arrives at Yule, if he's done a good job, I'll raise him to yeoman and she'll have a comfy little estate all her own."
"And how is that not nepotism?" she asked pointedly.
"It's exactly nepotism," I agreed. "That's my point. This way, if he messes things up worse, I can say, hey, I had to appoint him, he's my brother-in-law.
And if he does well, which I fully expect, Sagal is no idiot, then I can say, see, I know talent when I see it. Win-win."
That doesn't seem... Oh, I don't really care. I just don't want people to think..."
"Think what? That you are a lady of the land and that being related to you is a good thing?
Think that I'm the type of lady who's ready to cram her relatives down the throats of the people," she finished.
"We're going to have to stop worrying so much about what people think," I said, kicking my boots off tiredly. "If we do that, then we won't be able to get anything important done. I could have waited until Yule to strip Ferrant of his holding, because the other yeomen would have seen that as a more appropriate time to do it. But I decided it couldn't wait, and damn what they might think. I've got a domain to rule, and if someone is getting in the way of that, I have a responsibility to deal with that first." She smiled at me, which I wasn't expecting. I was prepared for her to pick a fight.
"What?" I demanded. "You look really cute when you get all resolute and lordly," she giggled. "Sorry, didn't mean to offend your dignity."
"That's something else I've got to be willing to part with at need," I shrugged. "I'm serious about wanting to be a different kind of lord. I'm committed to proving that mage lords can benefit their subjects, not just exploit them."
"I know, Min," she sighed,
"but don't get so involved in all of Sevendor's troubles that you ignore, well, things at home," she said. "I'm not feeling ignored just yet, but I got really lonely today.
Really lonely."
She began to weep. "I know I'm just having...
Pregnancy stirrings, but damn it, they feel real enough.
Come here, I said sympathetically, sliding into bed next to her. I'm sorry I was gone, but it couldn't be helped. I'll try to spend a few days around the castle and make sure you don't get too lonely. But there are going to be times, especially until I can get this relic livable and the Bovali settled. There are going to be times when I'm going to have to be away.
I know, she sniffed. The duty of a lord is to his people. That doesn't mean I have to like it.
Me either, I said soothingly. I held her while she wept until she started snoring, and I felt safe drifting off myself. Of course, that's when someone decided they needed to talk to me. I felt the stirrings of mind-to-mind contact, and the symbols for the spell swam before me. Reluctantly, I activated the request and established a link. I felt obligated. I'd been so involved in Sevendor that I had not only been neglecting the comfort of my bride, but I hadn't given much thought to the greater war effort in weeks. Thankfully, I had good, competent people to handle that. One of them was Terlaman, the Warden of the Magelands, and military commander of the War Magi and Mage Lords in the Alshari Wilderlands, who still faced the armies of the Dead God. And thankfully, the news was good. Things have been pretty quiet, he admitted, after we exchanged greetings. I actually contacted you partially out of boredom. That's encouraging, I agreed. So, no more sorties from the Penumbra? That was the region adjacent to the Dead God's sphere of direct influence, known as the Umbra. Not on this side of it, but they're reinforcing that last big castle in the south they took, Persilan Castle. There's at least 10,000 wintering there.
10,000 doesn't sound like that many, I observed.
If they were all infantry, I'd agree. But there are at least a company of trolls, and what appears to be the bulk of his engineer corps, and at least 20 shamans.
All right, that does seem like an abundance, I admitted.
What are they doing?
Gathering their strength is all right now. The Gavani don't seem to want to fight in the snow any more than we do. They haven't done more than a few raids against isolated settlements. But come spring, a force that large in Persilan can only mean that they plan on continuing a southern push.
What's the next large castle they'd have to face?
Drovadal. Count Morlad of Drovadal, to be exact. It's not the strongest castle in the Wilderlands, but then it's only barely in the Wilderlands. 60 miles south, you come to the Riverlands. And once there...
Let's hope the Gavani don't discover boats, I agreed. The Riverlands could be traversed pretty quickly by barge.
You should send word of this intelligence to the good count.
Already done.
And I've also requested that His Grace consider ordering a levy in Gilmora. Problem is, Count Morlad is not, shall we say, a friend of His Grace or his ambitions.
Dissent already.
There are a lot of Alshari who resent the mysterious death of Duke Lenguin in the field, and a lot of opportunistic great nobles are using it as a pretext for their own ambitions. Nothing surprising.
Working as a war mage could make you jaded about politics, and permanent prohibition against playing in politics allowed us to make judgments about it without being overly involved in it. We had all seen how opportunism had influenced the outcome of the wars we fought in. Telemann's ability to understand it, without being drawn into it, made him an excellent man to command the high magi in the field. Unfortunately, he was all too willing to rely on rumour, and not get his facts certain. I had to keep nudging him to take a broader view of military intelligence.
Keep an eye on him. See who he's talking to. When I spoke with Mavone and the other Gilmoran magi, they indicated that their countrymen's proclivity toward revolt would likely be tempered by the threat of goblin invasion, if Morlad truly understood what he's facing.
I'll see if I can't give him a private tour, Telemann said thoughtfully. I need to go inspect the garrisons in that region anyway. We have a sprinkling of high magi in the area, but I'm sending more. I'll stop by and tell some tales, give him something to think about. Somehow, I don't think the Gavani are going east this summer. They're heading south, into the heartland of the Riverlands. There was more, but that was the cheery thought I went to sleep on that night.